to the app and search for Must Watch. And then what you do is you hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And look, email us. Give us your thoughts. I love it when you disagree with us. It's so much fun. And tell us off. So email us with your thoughts on the shows we've reviewed or with your own recommendations anytime. Drop us a message at mustwatch@bbc.co.uk. Up next, Matt Chorley is live in Birmingham for day two of the Conservative Party Conference.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Thanks much, Naga. Yes, hello, it's me again at another party conference, my 53rd. Yeah, live from Birmingham today at the Conservative Party Conference. Four will enter, only one will leave alive. Well, it's not quite that dramatic, but we might at least get a bit closer to working out who the next leader of the opposition will be during the course of the next 2 hours. Plus, Liz Truss has turned up. What's she been saying? We will find out after we get the latest news from Johnny Freeman.
Thanks, Matt. Good afternoon. The BBC has upheld several complaints made by the actor Amanda Abington against her Strictly Come Dancing partner Giovanni Pannice. The corporation has apologised to her and said protocols were being tightened. BBC News understands the claims of verbal bullying and harassment by Mr. Pannice were upheld, but the more serious allegations of physical aggression were not. The BBC's chief content officer, Charlotte Moore, refused to go into details about the findings.
So there were a number of complaints under our bullying and harassment policy, and a number of those complaints have been upheld. Not all of them, but a number of them have been upheld. I'm not able to go into further detail on that. Confidentiality needs to be respected out of fairness to everybody involved.
Well, in a statement, Amanda Abington said her decision to come forward with her complaints had been difficult, but she now felt vindicated. Israeli tanks are gathering by the country's northern border as speculation grows that it will launch a ground offensive against Hezbollah in Lebanon. Downing Street has said the government's support for Israel was ironclad, but it's called for restraints on all sides to avoid the conflict escalating. Our security correspondent Gordon Carrera says Israel will be weighing up whether the time is right for an invasion.
Clearly, by decapitating, effectively, Hezbollah's command, it's made it harder for Hezbollah to respond. So the question for Israel is whether it thinks it's worth the risk, then, of taking that moment, that opportunity, which has been created by the targeting it's already done, to go in and go after Hezbollah on the ground.
Disciplinary action is going to be taken against four Metropolitan Police officers and a member of staff over how they handled allegations against serial rapist David Carrick. The former officer was handed at least 30 years in jail in February last year. Liz Truss has said the Conservative Party leadership candidates must acknowledge how bad things are. The former Prime Minister has been speaking at the party's conference in Birmingham. Kemi Badenoch and Tom Tugendhat will address members later. They're running in the contest to replace Rishi Sunak as leader alongside James Clay and Robert Chemrick. More than a century of traditional steelmaking in Port Talbot is ending today with the loss of more than 2,500 jobs. Tata says it is committed to replacing the old coal-fired furnace at the UK's biggest steelworks with a greener one. The government's providing £500 million of financial support. And new figures show UK house prices have gone up. The Nationwide Building Society's found there's been a 3.2% increase in September compared with a year ago. That is the latest for now. Delith Lloyd has the sports.
Thanks, Johnny. Manchester United are set to stick with manager Erik ten Hag for this week's matches against Porto and Aston Villa, despite their dispirited 3-0 defeat at home to Tottenham. United have lost three of their six Premier League games to leave them 12th in the table. Ten Hag had signed a new contract in the summer. Last month, club chief executive Omar Berada said he had the club's full backing. Newcastle boss Eddie Howe says he has his fingers crossed that Alexander Isak can be fit to face Everton on Saturday. However, the striker, who has a fractured toe, could also face the prospect of being sidelined until after the international break. And cricket, Hampshire are set to become the first county to be owned by an overseas franchise after agreeing a takeover deal by the Indian GMR Group, who also co-own the IPL team, the Delhi Capitals. It'll be a phased acquisition to be completed over the next 2 years, with some reports suggesting the deal is worth £120 million.
If you love your pop, this is right up your street.
Pop Top 10 with Scott and Rylan.
We've picked some of the most hotly contested questions of all time and decided to settle them once and for all with the help of some special guests. We're taking it very seriously.
I can't let things like that slide on this show.
Now, come on!
What?
What are you on about?
Don't put words into my mouth.
Right? I'm darling, you're spouting them yourself.
Search Pop Top 10 to listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
We need somebody to look after our economy.
It's the biggest issue in Scotland at the moment.
Wherever you are in the UK, you're part of this with us. Matt Shawley.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Well, here we are again then, Matt Shawley from another party conference in a drizzly Birmingham. Right now, I'm in the Hyatt Hotel. I'm sort of looking down from a balcony at the area where late at night, this is where all the sort of the boozing and the schmoozing goes on. Not a lot of that at the moment. It's all sort of coffees. Do you know how much a coffee cost? Two coffees cost me £11 earlier on, and they literally made it using instant coffee sachets. Honestly, that's the cost of living crisis right there. Who can I see from up here? I can see TV's Chris Mason over there, deep in conversation with someone. Lord Ashcroft, former Tory donor and author, is looking at his phone. Who else can I see? I mean, lots of former Tory MPs just sort of milling about looking for attention. But from the conference centre, we can go up these stairs and across the famous bridge. Now, this is the bridge. You'll definitely have seen pictures of this. This is where normally prime ministers are photographed walking across on their way to their big speech. Obviously not this year because they're not in power. And instead of that one big speech, what we've got is the endless sort of X Factor Judges Houses meets Miss World pageant that is the Tory leadership contest, where each of the candidates speaks at a never-ending roll call of events, some organised by themselves. They're doing Q&As on live on stage. They're giving speeches on Wednesday. They're giving endless interviews where one of them makes a mistake and everyone piles on. So we're now into the conference centre. Over there on the right-hand side, there's Joe Coburn off the telly doing politics live. Hanging down above me, or just across from me, some enormous banners with all of the leadership contenders on. James Cleverly and Robert Jenrick there. Behind me, Kemi Badenoch and Tom Tugendhat. And this is it's basically just an enormous trade fair for the four candidates. And we'll dig into them and how they're getting on, who's up, who's down with our panel today. They are Kate Ferguson from The Sun and Jess Elgott from The Guardian. Also on the show, it's the former PMs who are making all the headlines. Did you know Tory conference imports two-fifths of their former prime ministers? That is a disgrace, to quote one former prime minister. So yesterday we had Rishi Sunak giving a speech in what, I'll be honest, looked like a nightclub, with sort of blue neon versions of the Tory logo. Today Liz Truss has turned up. She's been doing an event to basically explain why she was right all along. So we'll dig into what exactly she's up to on the show today. Andy Street, the former mayor of the West Midlands, we're here in Birmingham. So we're going to hear from him on why he lost his seat and why the Tories lost more generally. And, of course, we'll continue my search for a Five Live listener in every constituency in the country with the MMP. I'm just walking past the Tory party shop. They're selling Christmas jumpers for £25.95, there are blue ones and red ones, and it's a sort of mixture of, if you can imagine a sort of classic sort of Swiss-style Christmas jumper, it's got dark prancing reindeer on it and the Tory tree logo, if that's the sort of thing that you want. There are Margaret Thatcher Toby jugs, £28.95. Or what you would call, four coffees in the conference centre. An umbrella would cost, a conservative umbrella would cost you £23.95. A pair of socks, £16. A tie, a conservative tie with the conservative logo on it, £34.95. Where, I mean, I suppose if that's what you want, that's what you want. That seems like quite a lot of money to me. There's the Kemi Badenoch stand just over to the right. They've got their lots of placards and things and cloth bags and pens and things they're giving out. But now we come into the big hall. It's a sort of, if you haven't been to one of these things, which is entirely possible, it's like a sort of trade fair where you've got a whole load of people with corporate stands, basically to bend the ear and lobby various MPs. You've got the National Grid here. You've got the NFU over there. The Movember here, they're offering haircuts again like they were with the Labour Party in Liverpool last week, and various things talking about renewables and the environment and other people doing interviews and that sort of thing. And then we just come a little bit further round the corner And we've got our lovely shiny BBC stand just on the corner. It's not too ostentatious like some other broadcasters. So do get in touch at any point during the show today. If you want to be the MMP, if you've got any views on which of the candidates you think would make the best Tory leader, is it Robert Jenrick, Tom Tugendhat, Kebby Badenoch, or James Cleverly? You know how to get in touch.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms for our terms of use and privacy notice.
And now I'm on the lovely BBC stand in the back corner of the trade fair area, conveniently located quite close to the toilets. Now, kicking off in the main conference hall, they're doing a sort of like Q&A with each of the candidates over the next couple of days. So what we thought we'd do is, throughout the programme, our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman, is giving us a quick bluffer's guide to each of the four Conservative MPs vying to become party leader. So let's kick off with Tom Tugendhat.
Tom Tugendhat, like Kemi Badenoch, ran in 2022. He finished one place behind her that time, but this time round wants to set the pace. So far, he hasn't managed to do so. He's got the fewest public MP supporters of any of the remaining candidates. He's generally associated with the Conservatives' One Nation wing, but is trying to broaden his support into the right of the party, saying he'd opt out of aspects of the European Convention on Human Rights, cap migration and reduce taxes. He's 51 and has been the MP for Tonbridge in Kent since 2015. Making his name as a backbencher who chaired the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, he entered government under Liz Truss, serving both her and Rishi Sunak as Security Minister.
Thanks so much, Henry. And we'll be back with more of those later in the show. We can go live to the hall now, I think, where Tom Tugendhat is on stage being interviewed by the journalist Chris Hope. Let's see what he's got to say.
Loves sword fighting, and he minds the fact that I'm not currently having a sword fight with him, with his swords. And my daughter minds the fact that I'm not always at her ballet recital. I know this is something we share, yes. Is the fact that our daughters are both very, very keen ballerinas. Yours rather more professionally than mine. I should. Don't tell her I said that, please. But the... My daughter is only 7, so I think she could...
Okay.
But, you know, of course they mind, but I'm very proud of them, and they're extremely supportive of me, and my wife is unbelievably generous in letting me come away for days like this and taking on the responsibility.
You mentioned your service, you know, obviously, congratulations on your service, 2003, 2013, in the British Army, Lieutenant Colonel, when you stopped doing that.
Well, we'll dip away from that while they're just discussing whose daughter's best at ballet. Joining me now for Monday's journalist panel are from The Sun on Sunday, Kate Ferguson. Hello, Kate.
Hi.
And from The Guardian, Jessica Elker. Hello,
hello.
Jess.
Hello.
I don't really know what to make of what we've just heard from what his son likes swords and his daughter likes ballet.
I think to say that things are softball at the moment at this point would... I mean, we've not always, not some great journalism going on, but I think on the... I think there is a very... There's a point here, actually. It's been very deliberate to make it as sort of less adversarial as possible. You know, there's no kind of head-to-head hustings. Yeah, yeah. There's no kind of pitting them against each other. It's all kind of gentle Q&As, fireside chats, and, you know, it's up to journalists like your good self to grill them.
Kate, have they sort of taken the sting out of the big speech on the last day? There's a sort of slight risk that by the time we get to Wednesday, everyone's going to be sick of hearing from them. Like, the you know, they're doing all these Q&A events. They're wandering around endlessly doing interviews, doing, you know, shaking hands, doing panels and all of that. There isn't going to be, it doesn't feel like, that big explosive moment like in 2005 when... David Cameron's big speech electrified the conference.
Yeah, and I guess, like, in the era of Twitter and 24-hour news, you don't quite have those moments in the same way you did. It is odd, isn't it? Like, we're here in Birmingham. 2 years ago, it was where Liz Truss's premiership blew up pretty spectacularly. And they're just sort of still picking over the embers, it feels like. But, yeah, 4 whole days of the Tory Beautiship Parade. It's a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a very long time. I think that sums up... The Tory leadership contest. In general,
is it too long?
Like it's a very, it has been a very long time.
Well, even the participants are pleading with it to be over
exactly.
sooner and wanting to be brought forward. Well, you mentioned Liz Truss. She has been here today, speaking to Tim Stanley from the Daily Telegraph, in the one event that she's doing. We're going to talk about it a bit more later on, but here's a bit of what she had to say about the four leadership candidates.
So far, I haven't seen any of the candidates really acknowledge how bad things are right. in the country as a whole, and frankly for the Conservative Party. So I think there's been a bit of Panglossian, all we need is to unite, all we need to do is show competence, and we will be ushered back into office. They have to explain what went wrong, why things are so bad for the Conservatives, and what they're actually going to do. So take energy prices. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard anybody advocating for fracking. I haven't heard a serious discussion about what we're going to do about coal and reopening oil and gas fields. There has been discussion about the ECHR.
Yes.
But what about the Human Rights Act? What about the Equality Act? What about the fact that Blair essentially made the judiciary less accountable by abolishing the traditional role of Lord Chancellor, and how that has totally damaged the British Constitution?
So that's a bit of what Liz just had to say earlier on. It was interesting. We'll hear it on the show later, because I went along the queue to ask people why they were queuing up. And some people were fans, and some people were there for some entertainment on a Monday lunchtime. It's quite striking, though, there, Kate, where the thing she's talking about, I mean, fracking was literally the thing that brought down her government.
Yeah,
she had that vote.
It was that spectacular vote where the chief whip quit the post mid-vote. Yeah, I mean, when she says we're not talking about the issues people really want to hear about, like Lord Chancellor, it's not exactly kind of the stuff they're talking down the pub about. I mean, God, you know, give
abolition
me...
of the Supreme Court is on everyone's lips. It really is.
Like, give me skin as thick as Liz's and I'll be all right, you know. I mean, it's amazing, really, because she's... no one wants her here, right? None of the Tory leadership contenders want her here. Most people just think she drags down the Tory brand each time she pops up. But pop up she does, and they just can't seem to get rid of her.
Because actually, there are people here, Jess, who do agree with the idea of having lower taxes, smaller states, being more dynamic, more pro-growth, which are all the things they're putting forward, all the things she was putting forward. The problem is, they don't want her to be the person putting it forward because of what happened. She was such a short-lived prime minister. She's sort of, some of the people I've spoken to said, well, she's damaging our argument because she's the one making it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, I think in the public's mind, she's the person you automatically associate with your mortgage being more expensive. And so the fact that she said she's not going to endorse any of these four candidates, I suspect they'll be breathing a sigh of relief that she isn't, because frankly, I don't think it's one that they've courted.
The endorsement no one wants, isn't it?
That is probably fair. Mm. Nobody would necessarily want her on their leaflets. Well, let's talk about someone else then from a previous era. Jeremy Hunt, now Shadow Chancellor, of course. Again, no big speech, another fireside. The trouble is, none of these things actually have a... I wouldn't mind if it had a fire.
No.
A log. If they had a log fire on stage, it would be fine. Although that's probably been banned.
I think Gove banned them, didn't he?
I think Michael Gove did ban them, didn't he? Did that actually happen?
I don't...
It's so hard to remember.
There's lots of these things were talked about and never happened. I mean, some of the last 14 years.
I think someone should try and light a fire on the stage and see what happens. See if Michael Gove intervenes.
Yeah.
Anyway, this was Jeremy Hunt doing a fireside chat without a fire, talking about the problems that the Conservative Party face, and saying don't assume that bad news for Labour automatically means good news for the Tories.
The trap to fall into, and it is a trap, is to think that as people get fed up with the Labour government, and judging by the last 12 weeks, that's starting to happen far more quickly than people were expecting. But as they get fed up, to assume that they will automatically come back to us.
I mean, that's quite a... he's a man who's been in politics, you know. He was in opposition, he was in government, he's now back in opposition again. That's a message that... There have been at times where this conference has felt a little bit jubilant. You know, even Rishi Sunak's thing last night, Kate, was like a disco. And you sort of think it's not really quite the mood with suffering your worst ever election result.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because obviously the Labour Party have had a pretty torrid few weeks, right, with the freebie scandal. But I've been really surprised at how many people have expertly come up to me and said, well, you know, Keir, lucky if he'll last 5 years, maybe he'll be out in two. You know, they're rushing to these conclusions way too quickly. You know, he's got a massive majority and the Tories, you know, you have to kind of win the argument and win voters back. And, you know, partly that's like a policy discussion. But you know what? They just have to be seen as kind of competent and they have to be liked. You know, the anti-Tory feeling out there is enormous. And voters won't just come fleeing back because of a few scandals rocking Labour.
And just as a sort of interesting question, because Conservative MPs sort of saying, well, look, Labour had their worst result in donkey's years in 2019, and now they've come back. But that was after also losing in 2010, 2015, 2017, and then 2019. That actually these four candidates are people who, to the extent they are in anyone's mind, they are in people's minds as being part of David Cameron, Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak's government. To be the change away from Keir Starmer, it's going to be quite hard.
And it feels to me like no one's actually really properly looking at the lessons of what Keir Starmer did to the Labour Party from 2019. Because all the lessons that I've ever heard people take from it is like, he's shown it can be done. But they haven't actually looked at what he did do, which was have some incredibly difficult conversations with his own party, radically move his party away from their comfort zones, and kind of overhaul it in a way that was quite controversial to his own party. I haven't seen anyone yet in the Conservative Party who's properly attempting to do what Keir Starmer did to the Labour Party.
In a way, they're doing the opposite, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Keir was basically like, you know, I'm going to sort of take powers away from members because, you know, you balls that up and I'm going to sweep in and install all these candidates, but actually, and he won an election. But these candidates in the Tory party are doing the opposite. They're talking about more power for association, more membership votes. Now, I'm not saying if that's a good or a bad thing, but the discussion they're having is the inverse of the one Labour had 5 years ago.
It's more actually like the Jeremy Corbyn pitch to the Labour Party in 2015.
Exactly.
In terms of retreat into comfort zone, traditional left or right wing values.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, people that I would speak to in number 10, that they don't seem particularly worried about any of these leadership candidates. That's not to say they think they're having a good time in government, but I think they share the fears of some people, which is like, actually, what we need to be concerned about is the beneficiary of us becoming less popular is not necessarily the Conservative parties, but parties like before.
And actually, if they, I mean, it was interesting at the height of sort of Boris Johnson's woes, it took a while for that to feed into, you know, Labour going up in the polls. You know, at one point they were sort of all collapsing. You know, Keir Starmer was a long way behind in the polls, and it took a long time really before Partygate led to sort of a corresponding rise for Keir Starmer.
Yeah, and you know, the electorate is volatile, and for the first time really in British politics, we're getting these more niche political parties, which in our system is very hard, but they have been emerging. Reform's obviously the most kind of obvious example. And it just goes to show that kind of there isn't this kind of God-given gift of it will be Labour or Tory. It feels
there are other places to go.
There are other places to go now.
Reform and Lib Dems and Greens and SNP in Scotland or Plaid in Wales. Michael Gove apparently said today that a critical part of the Tory party's recovery must be made in the north, as he warned against Treasury brain ahead of October's budget.
Treasury brain.
Yeah, Treasury brain is everywhere. Yeah. And I think it's very much part of one of the things that this Labour government is struggling with, which is, you know, extreme caution when it comes to things like public spending or change. And Treasury brain, I think, is something that Liz Truss kind of railed against in her own way. You know, this example of we can't do... for example, one of the good things would be the non-doms story. So this idea that Labour wanted to stop these very wealthy foreigners from having these tax loopholes. Well, Treasury brain would tell you we can't make a sort of principled stand against that because it might in the end up costing us more money. So we should just let these people do what they want because they spend more money in our economy. And that's the kind of thing it's like, a politician might say, but don't we want to take a stand against something? Don't we want to send a signal? Isn't it more important that we send a signal to the public about whose side we're on? And I think that has always been a sort of a bit of a tension in British politics.
And that was one of Liz Truss's complaints, wasn't it? Was that she thought if you cut taxes, you would stimulate growth and therefore you'd bring in more later on because there'd be more money around, but the Treasury can't model for that, so therefore they wouldn't they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, there was always this thing that kind of every minister complains about, but particularly Tory ministers, which is, well, the OBR won't mark it up. So basically, you know, we want to do this big thing. We think that's going to spark growth, but they won't put it in our balance sheet, so we can't do it. I mean, I think the thing is with Labour is they went into this election so cautious. They had a manifesto where they didn't say very much at all. In fact, the main policy they've come out with was not in the manifesto, right, winter fuel allowance being cut. So they don't really have that basis for... No one really knows what they want to do. I don't know if they know. So does the Treasury, does the kind of civil servants, the so-called Treasury blob, can they just knock them around behind the scenes?
And I think also one of the problems that they've got is, like, because they were kind of Mr. Rules and the people who really wanted to sort of idolise these bodies when Liz Truss and
well,
Boris Johnson
passed
were trying
a piece of legislation the OBR
to
pri- sort of...
Yeah.
They literally called it the Liz Truss Builder. The Liz Truss Lock.
To sort of allow these kind of independent bodies to have more, you know, essentially have to be consulted. I think some of them are kind of now privately finding out that that does actually maybe make your life a little bit more difficult. One of them said to me last week at conference, I'm starting to have a tiny bit more sympathy with Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's quite the shift. Yeah. I assume this was purely off the record.
Yeah, that's
very long. But in a minute, we'll talk a bit more about the candidates and the maternity pay issue.
Right.
And others. But would you like to help me draw my balls?
Gosh.
You've done this before, haven't you?
No, no one's ever asked me to do that.
I'm trying to find a Five Live list in every constituency. And so I've got an alphabetical list of... Did you not do this when you were on the other day? No, you haven't been on yet.
No, this is my first time.
Oh, here we are. So you have those ones.
Okay, brilliant.
So each bag has got numbered balls in it. If you do the blue ones first, because you've got 0 to 6.
So do I pull a ball out?
Just pull a ball out and tell us what number it is.
Okay, this is number 5.
Number 5. So that's quite late in the alphabet. Jess, what have you got?
A number 1.
Number 1. And I've got 0. So it's 510 on the alphabetical list. Is Smethwick. We've done that before, so shall I draw again for my bag? Okay. We're making up as we go along there. 511 is Solihull West and Shirley. It's actually not a million miles away from where we are.
No, just up the road.
Do you know anything about Solihull West and Shirley?
Don't call me Shirley.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Yes.
Well, are you in Solihull West and Shirley right now? Were you born there? Did you go up there? Did you once drive through it? Maybe you went on holiday there. I don't know if is it the sort of place you go on holiday? No, it's not.
Go
the sort
on holiday
of place
in the Midlands. I don't know.
Well, maybe. You might do.
Might do. Yeah.
Solihull West. It's not Andrew Mitchell's seat, is it?
It used to be Julian Knight.
There we are. Solihull West and Shirley. If you want to get in touch and make your claim to being the MMP, the Member of Matt's Parliament, Solihull West and Shirley, you can text me 85058 or you can WhatsApp 08085 909 693. We will get you on before the end of the show and you will get a certificate and a rosette.
Ooh, what colour's the rosette?
5 live colours, so it's all...
It's that sort of a UKIP colour,
impartial.
Isn't it, Matt?
No. Thank you, Kate. No, I haven't actually seen the rosettes yet.
It's like reform
yet.
Now, isn't it?
I'll tell you, is producer Jason, have you seen the rosettes? Do they look good? Have you seen the rosettes? Do they exist? No, nobody's seen them yet. I'm told they exist.
I'm clear that this exists.
I think the bottle openers exist.
Have you ever not found anyone?
Do you know what? Amazingly, no. Every single... So we're now on 4 weeks now I've been doing it, and we've always found someone. Even if it's been quite tenuous. They worked in a pub once, or they... Yeah, but we have found someone. 85058 on the text, 08085909693 on the WhatsApps. Somebody's been in touch saying, just tuned in and heard Liz Truss on the radio. For a horrible moment, I thought it was 2022 again, and she was in charge of the country. Don't scare us like that, Matt, says Brian Glasgow. She's still alive. She's still out speaking. There's no need to think you've gone back in time. That's it for her, though, isn't it? She's not turning up again, Jess.
I think that's it. Yeah.
Her PR was very, very clear. There's only one time thing, and that she would not be doing any other media.
They're quite relentless, her PRs. loads of, quite a lot of people are unhappy about Liz Truss appearing. Let me know what you think about that. 85058 08085 909693. Your connections to Solihull West and Shirley. And so are any of these party candidates, the extent you're paying any attention, are any of them resonating with you? Can we dip into a bit more Tom Tugendhat? Have we got a bit of Tom? Can we hear a little bit of Tom? Is he there?
And there's two things. Well, I've got the stage.
Oh, he's got a round of applause.
I want to thank Boris publicly for two things that I am just immensely proud of as a Conservative and as a Brit. And the first is, he stepped up when nobody else would to stand with Ukraine. That's heroism. He didn't do it alone. Ben Wallace was absolutely with him, and the two of them... I think we should all be deeply proud of both of them. But the second thing Boris did that I'm really impressed with, in that chaos of those first few weeks of COVID, when many people were running around like headless chickens, not quite knowing which way to go and what to do, Boris got together a task force led by somebody from the private sector, putting them in charge of civil servants, and delivered the fastest vaccine rollout in the world. That is impressive.
So that's Tom Tugendhat on stage. What do you make of that? The claim that no one else was standing by with Ukraine?
Well, I was going to make a different point, which was we're talking about Liz Truss still looming large, but Boris looms large over this party. And the fact that Tom's even going there and saying it shows that there's still this massive cachet among the membership to be seen as a fan of Boris's heir. But I wouldn't really think that Tom Tugendhat doesn't really appear to me to be Boris's heir, but he's still a character
exactly. Still feels the need to reach out.
Exactly.
I was struck earlier, I was signing books earlier for reasons in the bookshop, and people were almost queuing to get a flyer about Boris's book. There were so, which isn't out until like next week.
Yeah.
But there was so, there's still that sort of anything with
Boris
his face
mania
on.
Still
that, yeah,
a thing.
That's,
I think Boris is so emblematic of the problem that the Conservative Party's got in the future, because they've got to kind of bring together those northern seats, many of them who won over by Boris, and those kind of Lib Dem seats where Boris is, you know, absolutely the reason why people turned away from the Conservative Party. And none of these candidates are talking about that. They're just really not talking about how to bring both of them together at all.
And how, yeah, well, we'll talk a bit more about the candidates and how they're getting on in the various ways. The more they appear in public, the more mistakes they seem to make. I'm still joined by Kate Ferguson from The Sun on Sunday, Jess Elgott from The Guardian. Do keep getting in touch. So we've now established the MP now for Solihull West and Shirley is Neil Shastri Hurst.
Nice.
One of those rare new Conservative MPs elected in July, so it's still Conservative.
Oh, it's still Tory.
Still Tory.
I did not know that. New information.
So we've all learned something, which is not often something you can say about this show. 85058 if you want to get in touch. 08085 909693 on the WhatsApps. We'll do all of that after we get a news update now from Johnny Freeman.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Thanks, Matt. Good afternoon. The BBC has partially upheld complaints made by Amanda Abington against her professional partner Giovanni Panice on Strictly Come Dancing last year. The corporation has apologised to the actor and says it has tightened up protocols on the show. Mr. Panice has always denied the claims against him. Downing Street says the government is calling for restraint from both Israel and Hezbollah. Israeli tanks have been seen near the country's northern border as speculation grows of a ground offensive into Lebanon. Former Prime Minister Liz Truss has accused the candidates in the Conservative leadership contest of failing to acknowledge how bad things are in the UK. She's spoken at the party's conference in Birmingham, where Kemi Badenoch, Robert Jemrick, Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly are all addressing members this week. And Netflix has failed in its attempt to persuade a judge to throw out a defamation lawsuit brought by the woman who inspired the stalker character in the series Baby Reindeer. Fiona Harvey claims the streaming giants told brutal lies about her. That is the latest for now. Delith Lloyd has the sports.
Manchester United are set to stick with manager Erik ten Hag for the matches against Porto and Aston Villa this week. Despite yesterday's heavy league defeat at home to Tottenham, ten Hag has endured a poor start to the season, which has left United 12th in the Premier League. However, the Dutchman, who signed a new contract with the club in the summer, says he and the owners are on the same page. BBC Sports chief football reporter Simon Stone says United can't afford for another disappointing season in the league.
Ten Hag has spoken a lot this season about the fact that they've won two trophies. They have. Only Sir Alex Ferguson has won trophies in three successive seasons. So that shows how hard it is. So it's not to be dismissed. However, Manchester United also finished eighth last year, which was the worst finish in the Premier League era. There is no way that Manchester United will countenance another eighth-placed finish.
As for Tottenham, their 3-0 win moved them up to eighth. It's four wins on the bounce in all competitions. Defender Mickey van der Ven says everything is starting to click.
We also played really good games before this game, but we didn't really finish off our chances. So the points we have, I think we didn't really deserve the points we had, if you know what I mean. So today was a really important one for us, and it showed our quality and it shows how we can play and the level we can reach with the team. So it's now important we have to push through.
Arsenal boss Mikel Arteta says Ricardo Calafiori will be assessed before tomorrow's Champions League tie against Paris Saint-Germain. The fullback suffered a knee problem in Saturday's win over Leicester. Ben White will also have a late fitness test. There is commentary of that game on Five Live Sport tomorrow. There's still one more top flight match this evening in the Premier League. Newly promoted Southampton head to Bournemouth in search of their first win of the season. 3 points would lift the Saints out of the relegation zone. We'll bring you updates on Five Live Sport. England's cricketers will now focus their attention on the forthcoming test series away to Pakistan after their one-day series defeat to Australia. England lost by 49 runs under the DLS method in the fifth and deciding match in Bristol yesterday when rain stopped play. England's acting coach Marcus Trescothick says that there are still plenty of positives to take from the series against the Aussies, not least Harry Brook captaining the side.
He sees it well, he reads the game nicely, and I think the way that he's captain on the pitch, some of the field settings and decision-making has been really positive. And, you kind of like the way that he's gone about it within the guys. Quite quiet, unassuming, but just gets the job done, everything you want him to do.
England will play the first test against Pakistan in Multan on Monday the 8th of October. Meanwhile, India have set records for the fastest team 50, 100 and 200 on the fourth day of the rain-affected second test against Bangladesh in Kanpur. India reached 50 in three overs, a century in 10.1 overs and 150 in just 18.2 overs. That's the latest from BBC Sport.
Europe's elite club competition. The Champions League. Right here on BBC Radio 5 Live. On Tuesday at 8.
Arsenal host PSG.
Right footed. This is saved by Raya. A fantastic goal save.
And on Wednesday at 8.
Aston Villa take on Bayern Munich.
Tielemans fighting. Control. Driven shot.
And watch highlights of every single match with Match of the Day, Wednesday night on BBC iPlayer.
The Champions League.
On 5 Live. Listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live. The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Matt Shawley.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Very good afternoon to you. Matt Shawley live from the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham, completing our full set of conferences. We're in Liverpool with Labour last week and the Lib Dems the week before. We are looking for a Five Live listener today in Solihull West and Shirley. What's your best connection to Solihull West and Shirley? Sian has been in touch saying it'd be funny if a Shirley would phone you from Solihull West and Shirley. It would be. Someone else just says, I live in Solihull. That's good. Is your name Shirley? 85058, if you want to get in touch. Steve at Edinburgh says, Matt, I have owned and driven several Land Rovers. I mean, that's nice, Steve, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that information. I'm still joined by our journo panel. They are Kate Ferguson from The Sun on Sunday and Jess Elcott from The Guardian. Have either of you ever driven a lot of Land Rovers?
We didn't approve of that, The Guardian, to be honest.
Were we talking about Land Rovers?
No. I've got a confession. I can't actually drive. Yeah, I know. Don't tell anyone at The Sun, because obviously it's like the paper of cars. But I can drive.
Did you try to drive?
Yeah, I can drive. They just won't give me a licence.
Right. And you do that know happened... that the main test of getting a licence is being able to drive.
That happened on four times I failed my test. And
No, so I could tell you, Andy Street's here. He's coming up in a minute. He's just pointed out that Land Rovers are made in Solihull.
Ah.
Thank you, Andy. That's the sort of knowledge we need.
A tenuous link.
That might be the tenuous link. Yes. That you've driven a Land Rover made in Solihull. This is top quality content. Can you drive, Jess?
Yes, I can.
Did you learn to drive for a decade?
I talked about this on the show last week. Did you learn to drive on a tractor?
No.
Because that's what everybody who grows up in the countryside does. Your first driving experience is behind the wheel of a tractor.
On a Ferguson?
Yeah. So you need Ferguson on a Ferguson. That's got like a BBC Two documentary series.
Yeah.
You driving around Britain on a tractor made in Solihull.
If anyone's listening, I'll be up for that.
Yeah.
I always failed on a place called Bow Roundabout. And I challenge anybody to be able to pass a test on Bow Roundabout.
Oh, there's always a sort of bad roundabout when you're learning to drive that it becomes your, like, bête noire.
It's every man for himself on Bow Roundabout.
They will test that on on your driving test to make sure you can navigate a roundabout.
On my tractor.
Yeah, exactly, that's what you need. Let's go back to talk about the Tory Party conference, because we're here. Ian from Scarborough said, Matt, you all love bashing Liz Truss, but at least she knew where she was going, knew how to get there, and started moving very fast. Unfortunately, we'll never find out, as she was stopped by the civil service in the Bank of England. Thank you for that, Ian. And Steve's been in touch saying, well, we've sorted out the connection with Solihull and Land Rovers. Let's not get bogged down in that. Now, turn our attention to the leadership contest then, to become the new leader rather than what happened to the former ones. And Cammie Badenoch yesterday getting herself into a bit of a tangle talking about maternity pay, suggesting it was excessive. Here she is on Times Radio yesterday.
Do you think we've got the right level of maternity pay at the moment?
So maternity pay varies depending on who you work for, but it is a function where it's statutory maternity pay. It is a function of tax. Tax comes from people who are working. We're taking from one group of people and giving to another. This, in my view, is excessive. Businesses are closing. Businesses are not starting in the UK because they say that the burden of regulation is too high.
So maternity pay is excessive.
I think it's gone too far the other way in terms of general business regulation.
It's quite hard to listen to that, Jess Elgott, and not conclude that she thinks that there's a problem with maternity pay. And she's claimed she's been misinterpreted, but she said quite clearly it's paid for from tax and it's excessive.
I cannot get my head round what she thinks is the problem with the interpretation of what she said. I mean, yesterday, in a kind of mop-up operation, she tweeted twice about that with the clip, saying she didn't say what you can watch her saying in the clip. And obviously she's very frustrated because this is not the row that she wanted to be having. And, you know, she says, of course, she didn't say she wanted to abolish maternity pay. But I don't think that's what anyone, you know, was accusing her of. What she said was that it was excessive, and I think your listeners can hear what she's saying in the clip.
Okay, what difference do you think it will make? Because I suppose the one thing that this week is doing is there's a lot of folks on the Tory Party conference and the leadership race, and their ability to get through interviews without any whoopsie-daisies, because if you become leader of the opposition, there'll be even more scrutiny, even more fallout. And I was talking actually to someone who was on a different campaign who said Kebby's quite good on a stage doing a speech, but she this isn't the first time she's got into a tangle in an interview, and you don't really want to be someone who can get misrepresented on whether or not you want to take maternity pay off people.
Yeah, exactly. There's two things here, right? All the members are watching this week, and they're watching how the different candidates perform, and they're deciding who they want to vote for. The other thing is it's probably the only time in for ages where actually real people potentially are watching this too. It's in the newspapers, it's on the bulletins. And so you don't want to misstep like this. I mean, obviously, her rival contenders are cock-a-hoop that she made this faux pas. And it's also something, you know, there's not that many things politicians can say where you just think, gosh, I have an opinion on what you said that, and you've just really wound me up. But she did manage it. You know, every woman would have read that tweet, read that article, and think, gosh, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, and I think to go back, Liz Truss was talking about, you know, we should have these fights about who's on the Supreme Court or what the judges could be or whatever. And ordinary people listening to that are going to think, well, I don't really know about any of that. I mean, journalists can barely, I think, bring themselves to have an opinion on it. But on that, when she says, you know, I don't think I've very recently been on maternity leave, and I don't think anyone feels that we're excessively generous on it.
And actually, the point of the question was that it's, compared to other European countries, it's low maternity pay. That was like where the question was coming from. And that was the that was a conclusion that she reached. I just want to bring you another clip. It's slightly unfortunate, this, but we're in Birmingham, where in 1968 Enoch Powell made the River of Blood speech. This was Christian Hacking, who is an independent candidate who stood for an anti-abortion party at the last general election, was asked whether the Conservative Party would apologise for condemning Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech.
Enoch Powell made what is now a highly conservative speech in the 1968, of which he was smeared and kicked out of the Conservative Party. Are the Conservatives willing to apologise and unsmear his name for what, in hindsight, has been quite a fair and accurate prediction of what came, which is not Rivers of Blood? He never actually said Rivers of Blood, but actually, as your man said, heinous crimes have been committed by some of these unidentified individuals. Surely it's about time we said, made a statement saying that Enoch shouldn't have been treated the way he was for the statements he made.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's sort of smattering of applause there. I mean, this strikes me as like the last thing the Conservative Party needs is someone using the main conference to call for an apology to Enoch Powell. Jess?
And I think it's one of the first... I think this might be the first conference in it, certainly in a while, where they've allowed these kind of member debates back on the stage again. And there is a real desire, I think, from the party to try and bring members back in, give them more of a role in the party, you know, stop them leaving, stop them going to reform. The downside is what you know, just heard, which is not something I don't think anyone wants to concentrate on. And, you know, we've seen the pitfalls of this at Labour conference. You know, there's plenty of people who say mad things there as well. And I don't think, you know, they've got to try and strike a balance with involving members and them embarrassing you.
Okay.
Absolute last thing they need, because they're like throwing way back to the past. It's just, they must just have their head in their hands at some of these comments. And they're just going to have to hope that no one's really watched or heard that.
Well, we've accidentally played it on the radio. but there we are. Lovely to see you both.
Thank you.
The end is in sight of conference season now.
I know. It's always a bit of a roller coaster, isn't it? An emotional roller coaster, always.
Yeah, if we can survive without any terrible illnesses by the end, then
that's a very good point. Yeah. Well, lovely to see you. Jess Alcott from The Guardian, Kate Ferguson from The Sun on Sunday.
Thank you.
Go over and have a word with the NFU, see if you can go on their tractor.
I actually might do that. I'll send you a photo.
Yeah, that'll be a real learning lesson. Lovely to see you both taking a look at what's going on at the conference here. Tom Tugendhat still talking on the stage, one of these fireside chats. Throughout the show today, we're bringing you our Bluffer's Guide to the Tory Leadership Race. Up next, our Chief Political Correspondent, Henry Zeffman, on James Cleverly.
James Cleverly is the only candidate to have held one of the top cabinet jobs, the great offices of state. In fact, he's held two. He was Foreign Secretary under both Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, then Home Secretary until the Conservatives' general election defeat in July. He wants to resurrect the Rwanda asylum deal, abolish stamp duty and reduce regulation. He's 55, making him the oldest candidate, and has been the MP for Braintree in Essex since 2015.
Thanks so much, Henry. And Henry will be back with another of those in the next half hour. Well, my next guest, I've already introduced him because he rushed onto the BBC stand here at the Tory Party Conference to give me a piece of paper to say Land Rovers are made in Solihull. He is the former Conservative Mayor of the West Midlands. Andy Street, how are you?
Matt, yeah, very good to be here. And, of course, any opportunity to promote the West Midlands, I seize it. So
presumably, as a result of your time as Mayor, your brain is full of lots of, I was going to say useless information like that, fascinating trivia.
No useless information as well. But JLR are the biggest employer in the West Midlands, so it's a big deal for us how well they're doing, and the fact their plant in Solihull is the world centre of their EV revolution. It's really important, actually, for the future of the region and the country.
So it's a good. So the reason being, we are looking for a listener who is in Solihull West and Shirley to try and find a member of Matt's Parliament before the end of the show. I've had a message from a very senior colleague at Five Live, who frankly should have better things to do, who tells me the rosettes are on the way. That's a great promise of sunshine ahead. So, Annie, let's first of all, we'll talk about the future in a moment. Let's talk briefly about the past.
Do we have to?
Now you've had a bit of time to reflect on the mayoral elections, back in May.
Yeah.
What is your sense for why you lost in May, and then maybe more broadly on why the Conservatives lost in July?
So many of your listeners may know this, but let's not assume it, because not many are from the West Midlands, of course. So I did lose, but only just.
Very, it was very close.
1,500 votes in 2 million, and the swing against me was only 4%. It was a lot more for the party later on. And, of course, many people might think even to have a Conservative mayor for the West Midlands, because this is the youngest, most diverse, most urban place in Britain, in a sense, you could be surprised that we were as close as we were. And I think that, you know, we managed to run a good campaign that squeezed the Lib vote to just 2%, squeezed Reform to just 5%, but despite that, too many Conservative voters stayed at home. So if you ask me one reason we lost, Conservatives were demotivated and didn't come out to vote.
Would it have been easier for you at night when you're lying in bed thinking, oh, there's a sort of, would it have been easier if you'd lost by loads?
Yes.
Because you just lie there thinking, 1,500 people, I could have just gone to one more event, I could have knocked on a few more doors. The what ifs.
Yeah, so it's one vote in each ballot box, just to put it in perspective. I mean, it's tiny. It's 28 votes per constituency, so very close. And of course, if you get wiped out, you just think it was never to be. But you do keep thinking, if only I'd done that. So of course you're right. But another part of you says, I had 7 years, great run. We took the mayoralty from not existing to a big budget, well-established thing. And hopefully, I passed the West Midlands on to my successor in much better form than I inherited it.
And what have you been in touch with your successor? Do you have any? Do they pick up the phone?
No, not at all. And I wouldn't expect it. You know what? Because, again, people might know this, but before I was the CEO of John Lewis, and when I left there, I walked out the threshold, over the threshold, never to return, and I have the same attitude to this. Someone else is now in charge.
You've never set foot in a John Lewis since?
I've been in a store, but that's not what I meant.
In disguise.
Exactly. And hardly ever, given they closed their shop here. But the point is, it's his gig now. I hopefully passed over to him so he can build on everything we did.
So then let's talk about what happened in July. Given, like you said, the swing against you was much less than the swing against Rishi Sunak. You backed Liz Truss originally.
I did.
When she ran for the leadership. Do you think what subsequently happened with Liz Truss, and what she's been here today and talking about it and people are sort of reflecting on it, is she to blame for what happened then in July?
Everyone asks this question, who is most to blame? The answer is, there's a whole story that goes right back to 2019. Indeed, some would even say Laura Koenigsberg, or one of your colleagues, did a story that went right back to 2016 and the referendum. So it's not one individual thing, but it was a steady erosion of trust and confidence in the Conservative Party, and people just ended up thinking they cannot deliver. And you see it, there was just a sort of, on the doorstep, there was just a sense of lack of trust is the key word for delivery.
And so what happens now?
Yeah.
Because it was the worst result for ever for the Conservatives.
Ever. Yeah.
And the Labour Party, albeit on a low share of the vote, now have a big majority. They can do what they like for the next 5 years. Is there a way back, do you think, for the Conservative Party? Or is it like 97 or 79? Where actually the public are so fed up with the Conservative Party, they just want you to go away for 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, interesting question. And that's really what this conference is all about. So there's obviously got to be real contrition, humility, I said yesterday. But I'm not in the view that we're down and out forever, actually. You've already acknowledged the Labour majority is relatively shallow. But also there's a point about the lesson of history. We've written off both of the two main parties regularly in the past. I remember 83, Labour was never going to come back. Yes, they did.
Yeah, but not for 14 years.
But there's a difference, because now, of course, we do not have two-party politics. Yeah. We now have at least four-party politics, possibly even five. So the issue is, first of all, contrition. But the crucial issue, and it's what this conference is all about, is which way does the party turn? And again, the lesson of history is if you turn far left, Michael Foot, or indeed if you turn far right, you do not come back quickly. And, of course, Keir came back after the Corbyn left turn. So the message for us this week is we have got to get back to the centre ground where the huge majority of British voters are, and that's the acid test here.
Do you think, from what you've heard from the four candidates, that they are heeding that message? Because actually, there's an awful lot of talk about immigration, about the European Court of Human Rights, about cutting taxes, smaller state. That all feels a bit 97, not 2005.
Yeah, great question. The straight answer, and I've said this to them, I want to see a lot more of bread and butter issues. What I say people on the top of a Birmingham bus will be talking about, and it isn't the ECHR. It really is not. They want to know, and again, you come back to how I did much better than National Swing. They want to know about how jobs are going to be created in the new industries. They want to know about how homes are going to be built. They want to know critically here about how the NHS is going to be delivered, so that reform of the public services. So those are the bread and butter issues. Now, it's pretty tough, though, to these leadership contenders who didn't frankly know they were going to be doing this a couple of months ago to actually ask them to have
answers. There was a reasonable chance they'd be doing this.
Probably a little late. Probably a little later than now.
So,
and we do have to take it one stage at a time. But the real issue is who has the leadership ability to assemble a set of answers around those bread and butter issues, which is where the election will be. What does Keir Starmer keep saying? He's right. He keeps saying it's all about growth, it's all about the economy, and it's also about trust. He's also right when he says it's about a service government. So what we've got to do is which character has the ability to do that and has the ability to assemble the policy platform.
It's interesting because you talked about how you were in business before.
Yeah.
And you came in with a very, you wanted to do very specifically this job.
Yeah.
As mayor of the West Midlands from the centre, and you said, yeah, you know, that you think that's why you did quite well. I mean, the way you're talking, you sound quite enthusiastic about what Keir Starmer's talking about, more so than the sort of right-wing rhetoric we've heard from here.
Interesting. I didn't say I was enthusiastic about Keir Starmer. I said
you think he's getting it right.
No, I didn't say that. I said he's identified two things which are definitely true.
Yeah.
When he stood on the steps of Downing Street and said, this government has to be about service, that is right. That's why I said we lost trust, a critical word in leadership. Now, I didn't say he was actually playing it right, but to identify that was right. And the second thing he said is that it's all about the economy, stupid, which is sort of what Bill Clinton said, one of the best communicators in my adult lifetime. Because if you do not have growth in the economy, you cannot fund the public services that citizens here expect to have. So those two things are correct. And the real challenge to us is how are we going to demonstrate that we are the people who can do that?
It's interesting you use the word we, because there was lots of speculation, particularly even during your campaign. You didn't have Conservative on your leaflets. You were running, you had Green...
Back to 2017.
Exactly, because you were running as Andy Street, the local guy, and you knew the area, the businessman, and all of that, not wrapping yourself in the Conservative flag.
And it nearly worked.
Exactly. So my point is, do you still feel like a Conservative, and would you be happy in a Conservative party which ignored what you were saying and did move to the right?
So... do I feel happy as a Conservative? Yes. I gave my speech yesterday to welcome people to Birmingham and talked about what my view of what Conservatism is. And it's about unity in every sense, uniting across society. It's about delivery for everybody. It's about caring for those who are least capable in society as well. But, of course, you do it by freeing individuals to achieve their maximum potential. So that's the Conservative Party, that compassionate Conservative Party, the One Nation Party. And when we have been at our best in government, we have been that party. That's still my party. And I hope the outcome in the leadership election is we will elect someone who believes in that.
And who is that?
I have not declared for anybody yet, and I don't intend to.
As a at all during the campaign?
We will wait to see. As of today, no.
As a former, as somebody who used to run a business, do you think maternity pay is excessive?
No.
Do you think Kemi was right, what she said yesterday?
Well, she's come back from it. She said that it's not excessive this morning.
Would you be happy with a party leader who had to row back on interviews?
We all make mistakes. Okay. I've made mistakes. And I think, actually, if you permit me to say, I'm much more interested in the substance than whether she, quote-unquote, the word of politicians, misspoke.
Would you make a comeback? Would you stand again or stand as an MP?
I'm not going to stand as an MP. I was asked if I went to the same place. I was asked if I was going to stand for Solihull because there was a vacancy. By the way, my dad lives there. He can ring you up. No, he wouldn't like that. but I was asked if I was going to do that, and I turned down the opportunity, even though we won the seat, a brilliant new MP for Solihull. But it's not for me. The whole thing about the mayoralty, and you see this with other brilliant mayors across the country like Ben and like Andy Burnham, I must say, actually they fight for their place. They put place before party, and that is the purpose of the mayoral model.
Andy Street, really good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you. Thanks, Matt.
Former mayor of the West Midlands, Andy Street, joining me here live in Birmingham. As he was saying, we're trying to find a Five Live listener in Solihull West and Shirley. We have got some callers who are going to make a claim to become the Member of Matt's Parliament there. Angela, are you there? Hello, Angela.
Hello, hi.
Where in the world are you, Angela?
I'm in Solihull and Shirley West at this very minute.
Oh, very good. You're already doing well. What do I need to know about Solihull West and Shirley? Where's the best place to go for a Sunday roast? Have you ever seen a celebrity there?
Well, the best place for Sunday roast is probably, the Station Inn in Dorwich. Ever seen a celebrity? Well, I've seen Andy Street here. Is he a celebrity enough?
Oh, he's still here. He's enjoying that. He's giving you the thumbs up for that. So is it nice? Is it a bit posh as an area?
Parts of it are very posh. Parts of it aren't so posh. It's a mixed area completely. It's
and you've been
very leafy and green.
You've been there since 1980.
Well, I started working here in 1980, and then I moved here in 1990. And at one point, I could lay claim to work in every one of the gas offices in the whole of the borough.
I mean, that's a good claim. It's a good claim. We've got Anita on the line as well. Hello, Anita.
Hi there, it's Matt.
Where were you? Are you? What is your claim to Solihull West and Shirley?
I'm in Solihull at the moment. I've lived here since 1993.
1990. God, we've got some good long claim. So 93. So that was 3 years after Angela. What do I need to know about? Why have you been there for so long, Anita? Why is it so
13
nice?
13 years after Angela.
No, she only lived there since 1990.
Oh yeah. Right. I've lived here since 1993. I've worked in the school here for 19 years. And my family were all, my children were born here. Yeah.
What do you teach? Yeah. Are you a teacher?
Not anymore. I was in education, yeah.
And are they good, well-behaved children in Solihull?
Mixed.
Excellent. Very good.
Lovely children. Yep, definitely. Yep. Some lovely children in Solihull.
And some others that you also remember fondly.
Yeah, I'm pretty grown up myself now.
Anita, thank you for that. And Andrew as well. If you've got a better claim to Solihull West and Shirley, 08085 909 693. We'll get you on before the end of the show. And you could end up with a rosette and a certificate. Up next, what's Liz Truss really up to? We'll do that on Five Live.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Very good afternoon to you, Matt. We're coming to you live from the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham. On the way, Shadow Foreign Secretary Andrew Mitchell on the situation in the Middle East. We'll speak to two Tory MPs who lost their seats in July and ask what went wrong and why were people queuing up to see Liz Truss. We'll find out after the news with Johnny Freeman.
Thanks, Matt. Good afternoon. The actor Amanda Abington says she feels vindicated after the BBC apologised to her over allegations she made about her Strictly Come Dancing partner. The corporation's upheld some of the complaints against Giovanni Panice, who'd been accused of being abusive, cruel and mean. Mr Panice has always denied the claims. Our arts correspondent David Sillato is following the story.
BBC Studios, which is the production arm of the BBC, has concluded that her concerns, complaints were in part upheld. They have apologised for Amanda Abington, but not wholly. So the question we understand is probably that it's a matter of verbal abuse, bullying and harassment that they've upheld, but nothing suggesting any physical abuse.
Israel's defence minister has met troops near the country's northern border with Lebanon. Speculation over a possible ground offensive against Hezbollah grows. Earlier, Yoav Gallant said the military would use forces from the air, sea and land in its fight against the Iranian-backed groups. Hezbollah says it is ready for a potential invasion. Lamar Amin lives close to an area of the Lebanese capital, Beirut, which was targeted by an Israeli airstrike overnight.
I stayed awake the whole night to check if they're going to maybe bomb another place. At the moment in Beirut, when we hear the bombing, the building will be shaking as if like there's a non-stop earthquake under you. You're scared.
Four Metropolitan Police officers and a member of staff are facing disciplinary proceedings over their alleged failures to take action against a former officer. David Carrick was jailed for at least 30 years last year for raping 12 women while serving with the force. Tom Tugendhat has praised Boris Johnson's initial response to the coronavirus pandemic in a speech at